started in here.
It's that time of day. We don't know what we will say, but we'll say it anyway. And Samantha's here to push all our buttons. Headlines of the day. We'll be covering it all, okay.
Justice and Drew.
Justice and Drew
is on right now.
Justice and Drew
will be on
till 9 o'clock.
Just one look at you, and I know it's gonna be.
Wow! Would you look at that?
A lovely day.
Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130 and 103.5 FM. Good morning and welcome to your Wednesday edition of Justice and Drew. I am Drew, the oligarch of the morning show, sitting directly across from me.
I wish I was an oligarch.
I don't even know what an oligarch is.
An oligarch is the Russian word for a rich person who has political influence. That's all that it is.
Okay.
It's a rich person in Russia that carries a certain amount of political influence.
So you are kind of the oligarch of the show.
Relatively speaking, you know, I think if we're...
I take issue with that.
Well, it depends on your definition of rich, you know?
Like, he's richer than you.
Right. So if we're comparing like my bank account to your bank account.
You don't know what my bank account looks like, but yes, this is true.
Yes, but you know, you have riches in ways
more
beyond
influence
me.
Than you. He's definitely a lot more oligarchy than you.
I probably shouldn't. But,
Unwarranted.
No. Let's back up for just a second. Hold on. I do not think that I have more influence than she. I think she is more influential than I am. That's a positive thing.
Thanks.
Yes. I think of the two of us with power. So if we combine our efforts, we could be combined.
Well, that's great because
an oligarch.
Every morning, the three of us combine our efforts.
Ooh, yes.
So together, as one,
the morning oligarchy.
There you go. There you go.
That is a word, right?
It is now.
Oligarchy?
Sure.
It is now.
Welcome to your morning oligarchy.
For those that don't know, the whole reason we're mentioning that is because the words Russia, oligarch, Cohen, lawyer, Trump, porn star, payment all ended up in articles yesterday. Which got the anti-Trump derangement syndrome sufferers salivating.
Yeah. We got him.
This is it.
This is the one.
This is it.
We got him.
Paging TCNT.
And isn't all of this only coming from Stormy Daniels' lawyer?
Yeah.
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 So the only person that's saying this is Stormy Daniels' lawyer.
Right.
So somehow he's like cracked the code that Robert Mueller has been unable to now for a year.
Yeah, why is that so hard to accept?
Yeah, okay, just
yeah,
okay, just clearing it out.
All those things are true.
Michael Avenatti, who is hungry for every bit of media he can get, makes a claim.
Yeah.
Everybody accepts it at face value.
Yes.
Robert Mueller's like, hey, I've been looking into this for like a year and I haven't found it.
Right.
Okay.
That's true.
Okay.
Right. The porn star's attorney found the smoking gun.
Okay.
And was very happy to go and tell everybody about it on the day that President Donald Trump nuked the Iran nuke deal. So that you just...
Yeah. And we're accepting this at face value.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, why aren't you?
All right.
What's your problem?
Russian oligarch.
Yeah, so this is why Sam and I are oligarchs.
Here we go.
Oligarch.
Way to go, Michael Avenatti.
Everybody learned a new word yesterday. Oligarch.
He's a regular Dick Tracy. He's cracked the code,
true
man.
Story.
He's encyclopedia Brown. This whole thing. I am impressed.
He's a modern day Nancy Drew. Amazing. We are going to be speaking, we believe, with it might be an RNC spokesperson, could be the first Avenger, right around 7 o'clock this morning about the Iran nuke deal.
Steve Rogers will be joining us at that time.
We're going to have to get it out of our system now.
I know.
I don't think I'm going to be able to keep a straight face.
That's all I know
Steve
about.
Steve Rogers is on the phone.
Yeah, Captain America.
Steve Rogers is here to talk about the nuke deal.
I'm not worried about, you know, not having a nuke deal with Iran, because if things do go haywire, we'll just send Steve Rogers.
Exactly.
I didn't know we had a Steve Rogers, and now we do.
I think we know the plot for Infinity War, for Avengers 4 now. Also, candidate for gubernatorial candidate, Mary Giuliani Stevens will be joining us right around 8 o'clock this morning.
Looking forward to catching up with her.
Yeah, we got a lot of nonsense to talk about the Edina School District a little bit later on as well. We had a friend of the show alerted us to a school board meeting that that happened last night, apparently to decide what to do about the one, I guess, only conservative school board member in Edina, or at least the most vocal one, who was in a private Facebook group and was questioning a blog post by a 10th grade teacher. And we actually have the blog post, and you can understand why this particular school board member was very concerned about what was written in this blog post. Well, she's now taking heat because she's a conservative. And it's really interesting, too, Drew, this whole story. We'll get to it right around 7:30 this morning. In light of the forum, Center of the American Experiment, that we went to yesterday at the Marriott with Candace Owens.
Yes.
In light of her fantastic speech yesterday, it highlights what's going on in Edina.
It was funny because there were some tables of students that were there. One of them stood up at one point and said, you know, I'm a student at Edina High School, and the entire room went, oh.
I mean, the whole room did.
600-something people in this room. The biggest lunch the Center of the American Experiment has ever put on. Candace Owens is an absolute rock star.
Yeah.
And she's taking questions from the audience. And when you got 600 people in a room audibly groan at the words Edina High School, you got problems.
Yeah. One of the students said that because she's outspoken in her conservatism, that she's like been locked out of classrooms.
Yeah. Yeah, she got locked out of a classroom because she was a conservative.
Well, and Candace made a...
That's awesome.
She made a great point. You know, she made a lot of great points. But one of the things she's mentioned, and I talked about this with Melinda on the drive home yesterday, was if you coming out as a conservative today in 2018 is like coming out as being gay was back in the 1980s. And I was like, it was a really...
More like the 1940s.
Yeah, true story. Really, it really is. You know, I mean, I know people around here in the hallway know that I'm conservative, but I don't dare go and tell anybody. I don't like to bring up that conversation. I mean,
you know, we experience it here. I'm sure everybody listening that leans conservative has had that experience in a social setting or a workplace setting where politics comes up and you're either hesitant to interject because it seems like everybody in the room is of the similar mindset, of a same mindset, or you do and you become an outcast.
That's why when I get my hair cut, I don't like to get into the discussion. So what do you do?
It happens to me all the time.
I just work in radio. Yeah. What do you do in radio? You play music? Yeah. No, you know, just talk about stuff. And you just keep cutting, please.
It's a 50-50 chance when people find out what you do. They're going to have a positive or negative reaction.
Yeah, and whether or not I'm going to get a decent haircut.
Yeah. And the negative reaction is always a little over the top.
651-989-5855. Sam, scouring. How is it?
It's great.
Awesome.
Bring you the top five stories. Coming up next.
Justice.
Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130 and 103.5 FM. Welcome back to your Wednesday edition of Justice and Drew. Use the hashtag TCNT on Twitter. We do monitor that throughout the show.
Whew, boy. Yeah.
It's fun.
Before we get to Sam's top five, just real quick, CBS News, but a story out of the UK. I just thought this was interesting. UK schools are getting rid of analog clocks because teens cannot tell time with them.
I knew this would happen. I knew this would happen eventually. And you know what? It's probably not that big a deal.
Yeah,
they probably had the same conversations when people started getting rid of sundials. Nobody can read a sundial anymore. All these kids these days, they got all these clocks with hands on them that move on their own.
A teachers union in the UK says not only are teenagers more used to digital clocks these days, some don't even know how to read an analog clock. The current generation aren't as good as reading the traditional clock face as older generations. When I first saw it, I was like, I kind of had the gut reaction, that's lame, this kind of thing. But then I went, okay, what circumstance do you need to be able to read, or would you use an analog clock over a digital clock?
You almost need to go out of your way now to have an analog clock around you.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Like, they're very decorative and attractive.
Absolutely. I love them.
Yeah, we have a couple of nice ones in our house that I think are very, very attractive.
But you need to be someone who appreciates the decorative use of an analog clock, and you have to go out and buy one. Otherwise, you're surrounded by digital clocks.
Yeah, I mean, watches. I mean, I still would, if I'm going to wear a watch, it will always be an analog one, not a digital one.
Even watches these days, though, are being replaced by, like, Apple smartwatches and Fitbits and things like that.
I wonder, though, if there'll be because there still is a market for the really high-class ones, the real intricate, intricate ones, and I can't think of the names off the top of my head, but of the...
Well, like
the
Rolex watches.
There you go, Rolex, just to use that one. And I wonder if there'll be a bit of... I wonder if that will continue to be sort of a luxury item, especially when so many people are trying to put their phone away, you know, to be able to tell time. But then again, you don't need to go very far before you can find a clock somewhere.
You just ask the person sitting next to you.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. At that point, if you have like a watch, it's mostly like a fashion statement.
Like, you'd have to like travel to a distant land to be out in the middle of nowhere to not be able to find out what time it is if you don't have any time mechanism on you.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, kids should, everybody should know how to read an analog clock, but I imagine within 15 years, they're going to be even rarer than they are now.
It'll be like retro. It'll be like retro if you know how to read an analog clock. It's kind of like cursive writing. Like, half my cheerleaders can't read cursive.
I can't write. Yeah, I can write cursive, but not well. By the way, I have 6 clocks within eyeshot of me.
Oh, yeah. Same. Yeah.
I've got at least 6.
And the one analog one that's actually in Sam's studio isn't even the right time.
It's never right. I don't know why. I don't know who said it. It's not even like it's an hour off or anything.
It's been wrong for years.
Yeah, like, it's just...
Nobody notices it. It just sits up there. It's been wrong for years.
You know who notices it? Every single person who walks in the studio that's not, like, regularly in the studio, I have to hear about it. It's like, according to this clock, it is currently, like, 5:25. Or 5:20. I guess it is about an hour off.
And that's good, because it's just in time for your top five this morning.
Number one.
Trump says he's withdrawing the U.S. from the Iran nuclear accord. From the Associated Press, President Donald Trump announced yesterday the U.S. will pull out of the landmark nuclear accord with Iran, dealing a profound blow to U.S. allies and potentially deepening the president's isolation on the world stage, according to this story. He said...
It's all negative.
It's all negative.
Everything. It's all terrible and negative.
Apparently, there's absolutely no possible positive spin you could even take.
Unbelievable.
And apparently, it's completely unprecedented, and everybody told him not to do it, apparently, according to all of the media. He said in a televised address, the United States does not make empty threats. Trump's decision means Iran's government must now decide whether to follow the U.S. and withdraw or try to salvage what's left of the deal. Iran has offered conflicting statements about what it may do, and the answer may depend on exactly how Trump exits the agreement. Trump said he would move to reimpose all sanctions on Iran that had been lifted under the 2015 deal, not just the ones facing an immediate deadline. This had become known informally as the nuclear option because of the near certainty that such a move would scuttle the deal. Supporters of fixing the agreement had hoped Trump would choose a piecemeal approach that could leave more room for him to reverse himself and stay in the deal if he could secure the additional restrictions that European nations tried unsuccessfully to negotiate with him. Still, the administration planned to allow a grace period of at least 3 months and possibly up to 6 months so that businesses and governments can wind down operations that would violate the reimposed U.S. sanctions.
Yeah, and I said it yesterday. I was of the opinion that this was, his rhetoric around this and his statements around this were designed to put pressure on our allies and put pressure on Iran to enter into agreement that is of more favorable terms to the Trump administration, more favorable terms to the United States. It's still a possibility, just because he's publicly stated that he's going to withdraw doesn't mean that it still can't happen or we can't get another deal that's, you know, a much better deal for the United States than what we previously had. But look, somebody on Twitter, and I don't remember who it is. It was a congressman on Twitter, had the take yesterday that I agree 100% with, 100% with. If these types of things are important to you, then you should be advocating for Congress to be far more involved in these types of negotiations and these types of deals rather than just have it willy-nilly by the president. You live by the president, you die by the president. When the president goes and when Barack Obama goes and enters these types of deals without congressional, you know, oversight and signing into law legislation that would ratify these deals, when the president creates dreamer immigration status programs, then the next president can come along and undo them. That's just how it works.
Look, Iran was continuing to develop their weapons program, and they weren't giving us access to the sites where they were continuing to do so. They were only giving us access to the sites where they weren't doing that. But they had, with this deal, a curtain that they could hide behind. Well, they don't have that curtain to hide behind anymore. Right? And Benjamin Netanyahu came and pointed that out before. And the fact of the matter is, and we're going to get into more of this later on, just after 7 o'clock, but nobody's talking about the fact that this is the state sponsor of terrorism. I mean, just across the board. And a whole lot of that money that was given to Iran in that deal went to go and sponsor that terrorism. The Revolutionary Guard got a big cut of the money that we gave to Iran. So they're no longer able to hide behind that bogus deal that Obama put in place with them. I'm glad that he got rid of it. I hope that it remains gone. Unless, and Benjamin Netanyahu, to what you said, he said something very similar, and you mentioned it. This could be a massive negotiating tactic. Yep. And if they can get, if Iran actually went and did what they were supposed to do, and Israel and Benjamin Netanyahu agree with a new deal that actually does what it's supposed to do, then great. But if not, then no deal.
We will cover this more coming up at 7 o'clock with Steve Rogers from the RNC and more of Sam's Top 5 coming up right after this.
Justin.
Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130 and 103.5 FM. Justice and Drew along with Sam as we work through this morning's Top 5. Got lots to get to later on in the show. We'll be talking with an RNC spokesperson, hopefully right around 7 o'clock, about the Iran nuke deal. And then right around 7:30 this morning, controversy that we'll dive into. Shocking, Edina School District.
Yeah, finds himself in another batch of controversy. Ugh, just a mess. Absolute mess what's going on in Edina. But we are in the midst of Sam's Top 5.
Number 2.
Israel has gone on high alert over Syria as Trump quit the Iran deal. From Reuters, Israel went on high alert for a possible flare-up with neighboring Syria yesterday as the U.S. President Donald Trump, and as we've already discussed, announced that he was withdrawing from the 2015 nuclear deal with Iran. The Israeli military said that after identifying irregular activity by Iranian forces in Syria, it instructed civic authorities on the Golan Heights to ready bomb shelters, deployed new defenses, and mobilized some reservist forces. Israel's top general canceled a scheduled appearance at an annual security conference and was conferring with the defense minister and other national security chiefs. Trump's apparently hard tack against the nuclear deal, while welcomed by Israel, has stirred fears of a possible regional flare-up. Iran and Lebanon's Hezbollah have been helping the Syrian president back a 7-year-old rebellion. Israel has carried out repeated airstrikes against them, hoping to stop the formation of a Lebanese-Syrian front to its north.
Yeah, and a lot of those airstrikes going into Syria are to target specifically Iranian-backed Hezbollah in Syria. Look, the reality is Israel's always on kind of high alert, and they have been for a long, long time, and even prior to yesterday's announcement of backing out of the nuke deal, the tensions were already ratcheting up, and this was something that Benjamin Netanyahu wanted Trump to do, and was pleased that he went and did it, despite the fact that it's causing increasing tension. Tomorrow on the show, we will have Katie Pavlich on. She has extensive background on Israel, especially with the embassy moving next week. Tensions were already high with that going on, and we'll be talking to her at length with her about it on tomorrow's show.
Number 3.
The Timberwolves assistant Rick Brunson has resigned following complaints about conduct toward women. From the Star Tribune, the Timberwolves issued a terse one-sentence news release yesterday that said assistant coach Rick Brunson resigned, effective immediately. An NBA source confirmed that Brunson had been the subject of complaints for improper conduct toward women. Brunson was one of four assistants to the team's president of basketball operations and head coach. He was 45 years old, played 9 seasons in the NBA. He's been an assistant for Denver, Charlotte, and Chicago before joining the Timberwolves staff in 2016. In 2015, he was acquitted in Chicago of all charges. He had sexually assaulted a massage therapist with whom he admitted to having an extramarital affair. Brunson's son, Jalen, was the college basketball player of the year at Villanova and has declared for the NBA draft. And Monday, the Timberwolves dismissed player development coach Vince LaGarza, shooting coach Pete Patton, and assistant video coordinator Wes Bone.
I don't know if any of that's related.
I don't know.
to the allegations against Brunson. It's unfortunate. These allegations seem rather serious, and the immediate resignation would seem to lend some degree of credence to them.
Well, you continue to look at the middle of being in this hashtag Me Too movement, for lack of a better term, and it is good to see, without knowing the details of this particular story, it is good to see that, you know, people are very quickly being held accountable. Yeah. For their actions, where in the past there may have been, and we've known that there has been circumstances where that wasn't the case. If somebody was valuable, a lot of times things were unfortunately and inappropriately overlooked. And it doesn't seem like that's happening anymore.
Harvey Weinstein.
That New York attorney guy.
There's a whole culture of people out there.
On and on.
Covered up, you know, because the person had some value. I mean, the media especially, the media is really gross about it. You know, all the stuff going on. There was something really broken and wrong and disgusting going on over at NBC News. You got the Brokaw allegations came out recently. The Charlie Rose allegations over at CBS, dating all the way back to the 80s. You know, if you were a valuable personality,
yep,
and they thought that you were important to their on-air product, they would just look the other way. It was gross.
Number four.
Job openings in the United States just hit a high record.
Oligarch? What are you doing? You can't be giving news like this. Russian payments, Cohen, Trump, porn star, lawyer. I mean, you can't. This is good news. You can't. What? Question your five there, Sam.
It's an important story to me. Apparently,
no, it's great news.
From Money CNN, the United States has hit a record 6.6 million job openings at the end of March. That's a lot. That's the most since the Labor Department started keeping track in 2000. In addition, the number of new hires fell by 86,000 in March to 5.4 million, reflecting that businesses aren't finding the right candidates for available jobs. Taken together, the two data points are signs of shortages in the labor market. Mm. Job openings have set records over the past few years as businesses have struggled to fill openings. Half of small business owners said that they cannot find enough qualified workers for open positions. Almost a quarter say it's the biggest problem for their businesses.
Yeah, great job, public education system. Great job, public university system.
But everybody's going to
college. You know, look, the labor shortage isn't bad news, you know, if they're, you know,
I mean, there's jobs.
Yeah, there's a lot of job openings, and there's a lot of businesses that are competing for the available labor pool. And when you have a labor shortage, you know, they're going to get more competitive to try to attract the best candidates, which means that if you have the skills that these employers are looking for, you're likely to find a better paying job than you would have. Right, because they're gonna want to pay more for people with the right skills. But it really frustrates me when we talk about our public education system, our public schools, and our public universities as these sacred institutions. They're failing. They are failing across the board. We are spending so much money, billions of dollars, on our public education system and our public universities, and they are not doing their job, which is to not just educate, but also, you know, train and provide them with skills that will make them employable and make them marketable. And they are not doing that. They've gone so far down this, you know, this social justice path that they think that that's their job. Their job is now to shape minds and to pass on ideologies rather than in, teach kids how to read, how to do math, how to write, how to learn skills, how to be not just a, you know, not just a good employee, but how to function in this world, how to function in this job market. And they are not doing that. They have abandoned that altogether.
Job openings increased by 472,000 from February to March. Professional and business services, construction and transportation, warehousing and utilities are leading these new vacancies. There are now about as many openings as there are unemployed workers. During the Great Recession, roughly 7 unemployed workers were chasing every available job.
Well, and the other facet to this, too, is that you had 8 years of, you had a stunted GDP, you had stunted job growth, you had, you know, stunted in employment opportunities, and the numbers that we focused on for so long during the Obama years were the number of individuals that dropped out of the workforce, that just stopped looking for work altogether. And when that happens, and when you decide that you're going to go a different route because you've lost a job, there aren't jobs available, you make those adjustments in your life, right? Because you want to make sure your life is as good as it could possibly be given the circumstances that you have. Well, you flash forward, and you have Trump in the White House, you have consumer confidence soaring, you have jobs now that are looking at further restrictions from the federal government, you look at Obamacare and lifting some of what it was entailed with that was stunting the job growth, and now you've got all these businesses that are able to expand, and they feel confident in growing. So what needs to happen now is, to what you were saying, the school system needs to do a better job, but now people need to get caught up. And before, they weren't going out and getting any training because there wasn't any jobs to go and get trained for. Now there are jobs that people can train for. Unfortunately, so many of the activist organizations out there that are supposed to be fighting for the, you know, for the working person, they don't push the job training aspect of it. They push raising things like the minimum wage. And so hopefully, you know, in a matter of a year or so, a lot of people will wise up and be like, hey, I can move out now on to a better career. I don't have to settle for what I was settling for 8 years. And they'll get that job training, and these positions will end up, hopefully, you know, be filled.
And I hope more and more parents, and I hope more and more college, you know, high school seniors, as they're looking ahead at their path out of high school and where they're going to go from there, stop and ask themselves, is this education I'm going to get from this public university that I'm considering going to worth the, you know, $24,000 to $40,000 a year that it's going to cost? Is it worth going into this much debt? Am I going to be able to translate that into a good paying job, into a lucrative, enjoyable, successful career? Or am I just throwing money down a hole and setting it on fire?
Number five.
Ex-officer Mohammed Noor has entered no plea in the Justine Damon killing. From the Star Tribune, Mohammed Noor, the fired Minneapolis police officer charged in the shooting death last summer of Justine Ruchek Damond, has made his second court appearance yesterday morning without entering a plea. Noor, he's 32 years old of New Hope, faces charges of third-degree murder and second-degree manslaughter for shooting Damond from inside his police SUV after she had called 911 to report a possible rape near her Southside home last July. Noor is the first Minnesota officer in recent memory to be charged with murder in connection with an on-duty death. The case, which has attracted international media attention and led to the ouster of the city's former police chief, remains in its early stages. Assistant Hennepin County Attorney Amy Sweezy told the court yesterday that the discovery process, during which both sides share documents and information that they may present at trial, is largely complete. She added that no plea negotiations have taken place. Noor's St. Paul-based attorney, Thomas Plunkett, asked the district court judge, Catherine Acquaintance, for a meeting with prosecutors to discuss scheduling matters and establish a timeline of future hearings. In a filing last month, Plunkett indicated that his client intends to plead not guilty in both charges, arguing that the former officer was acting in self-defense and used reasonable force when he shot Damond. That plea was expected to come yesterday at what is known as an omnibus hearing, but Noor remained silent throughout his 2-minute appearance.
Yeah, it's going to be a long road. You know, this is, and it's not surprising that this is, that there was the no plea in this particular phase of the trial. And again, it's just a further indication that there's a very, very long road ahead as we work through and end up with an eventual, you know, ruling on this particular case. So just, we'll continue to bring you the news as it comes in, but this is not going to be over quickly.
Excellent job, Sam. Stellar top five.
Here.
Before we wrap up and move on to our guest at the top of the hour, let's get caught up on what the president has been tweeting this morning.
Trump tweets.
Trump tweets.
Trump tweets.
Yeah, yeah.
Trump tweets.
Trump tweets.
He always tweets.
What now?
Oh, sh**.
23 minutes ago, the president tweeted, "The Republican Party had a great night, tremendous voter energy and excitement, and all candidates are those who have a great chance of winning in November. The economy is so strong." He threw some extra O's in there. "And with Nancy Pelosi wanting to end the big tax cuts and raise taxes, why wouldn't we win?"
Right.
And that does need to be pretty much the, you know, every Republican candidate, especially House candidates out there, that's what they need to be running on. They need to be running on the economy. They need to be running on the fact that if they lose the House, not only are, you know, bogus, ridiculous impeachment here, you know, talk going to dominate, they're going to do everything they can to roll back those tax cuts.
Hey, Drew, he just tweeted again.
He did.
Yeah,
37 seconds ago, Candace Owens, who we saw yesterday, of Turning Point USA, is having a big impact on politics in our country. She represents an ever-expanding group of very smart thinkers, and it is wonderful to watch and hear the dialogue going on. So good for our country.
Yeah, I don't know if her first speech yesterday is available yet. Hopefully somebody got it. I thought I saw some cameras rolling. And we'll try to track it down and put it up, because it is worth a watch. If only
she's a game changer.
If only for her talking about Kanye West and the insight that she provided in her conversations with Kanye, and the worlds colliding, if you will. The way that she laid it out yesterday at that forum was really, really captivating and interesting.
One more tweet from the president before we go to break. "The fake news is working overtime. And we were just mentioning this a moment ago. Just reported that, despite the tremendous success we are having with the economy and all things else, 91% of the network news about me is negative," and then in parentheses, "fake."
Yeah. It's the vicious cycle. It's ridiculous. It's so negative against him that even if you have something that pops up that might be actually legit negative against the president, they provided so much ammunition that there's always a counterpoint. It undermines the ability for the left and the anti-Trumpers to actually go and put anything of substance in terms of criticism out when it comes to this president.
Let's talk to Chris in Minneapolis real quick. Go ahead, Chris.
Hey, I was just going to make a comment on the job training programs here in Minneapolis, St. Paul area. I have two boys that chose to go the technical school route. The one boy graduated 4 years ago. He's now 25, makes $65,000 a year, owns his own house. Second boy graduates Friday. He's already employed.
Wow.
Making really decent money.
That's
no
great.
No college debt whatsoever.
Do you feel really bad that he didn't go to a college? I bet that really bothers you, huh?
Oh, yeah. It sure does. Yeah, not at all. The programs are out there. The jobs are out there.
Yep.
Somehow it needs to get spoken about at the school.
Well, you're right. It does, you know, public schools, high schools would be well served by highlighting these routes and these paths. The problem is public schools are run by the government, and the universities are run by the government, and they have a vested interest in keeping students on that path. It's very lucrative for state governments to keep students on those paths and funnel them into public universities.
We'll let you know what former President Barack Obama had to say about Trump declaring the U.S. was leaving the horrible Iran nuclear accord. And I believe we're going to be having a guest on with us, correct?
Steve Rogers from the RNC joins Justice and Drew next.
Justice.